I love to track progress. As you guys know from listening to this show, I'm constantly tracking my progress. What have we done so far in 2024? And spring is in full bloom. Are your finances blooming too? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, it's easy to start building credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments with no annual fees or interest. And if your credit scores grow, so could your opportunities for lower rates on loans like for a car or a home. You can use it everywhere Visa credit cards are accepted. That's right, you can build your credit using your own money. Get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. With a qualifying direct deposit, you can get access to your money sooner. Fee-free overdraft with SpotMe. Overdraft up to $200 without fees with SpotMe when you set up a qualified direct deposit. Just set up a qualifying direct deposit, sign up for SpotMe, and Chime will spot you up to your limit when you make a credit card purchase or cash withdrawal that exceeds your balance. Access 60,000 plus fee-free ATMs. That's more than the top three national banks combined. Easily find one near you with the Chime app. Send and receive money. Use Chime to pay anyone, Chime members or not, and cash out your money fee-free. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started at chime.com/badmoney. That's chime.com/badmoney. Chime. Feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A., members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
This was an amazing moment, is that we were on a podcast and somebody said that they did not want Hillary Clinton to run for president, but they did want Elizabeth Warren to run for president.
Oh, cool.
And I was like,
cool,
I was
original
like,
thought.
You can't just substitute women.
Right.
Or actually, Rhea said that. Rhea says you can't just substitute women. Like, that's weird.
No, you realize those are different people. What I said was, because he was like, this isn't about gender. If it was Elizabeth Warren, I would be supporting her. And
sure.
I said, if it wasn't about gender, then you wouldn't bring up Elizabeth Warren.
Correct.
Like, only Elizabeth. Right. So then Rhea said this on a podcast, and then somebody yelled at me on the internet. And what I loved is that in a moment where we were like, you can't tell the difference between women, somebody couldn't tell the difference between women.
Yes. I love
Yay!
That. I know.
The internet.
You got problems that you ought to be concerned with. Moolah. You don't know how you're supposed to earn it, or what to do with it, or how to keep it. You're a freak with a dark, shameful secret. But you're not the only one. Get your hidden financial fears with a blast of sun. Now your healing has begun. It's Bad with Money with Gabby Dunn.
Hello, I'm Gabby Dunn, America's deadbeat sweetheart and financial moron. As you hopefully gathered from my episode with my boyfriend Garrett, being bad with money can get even more complicated when you decide to share your life with a romantic partner. Gross. Just kidding. In my case, you end up doing a lot of lying and being shady about things, which is not ideal. In that episode, you heard Garrett talk about believing in a future with me, even though my aforementioned financial idiocy has caused us both a lot of stress. Which makes me feel great, obviously. Particularly because it's really hard to say what direction our lives are going to take professionally. As I keep reminding you guys, Allison and I have a bunch of big-time projects out there in the ether, which, side note, I will tell you about as soon as I can, unless they end up crashing and burning, and then I will not have told you anything about it. I will just be depressed. That's the thing. These projects might crash and burn and never go anywhere. Same for Garrett. He might get hired as a TV writer and then we'll be an incredibly attractive and influential Hollywood power couple, which, P.S., we already are. Or he might decide his entertainment career isn't going the way he wants and go back to selling sheep stocks to soybean farmers or whatever he used to do. If the scenario I was talking about earlier comes to pass and all of my projects fall apart in a spectacular flame out, then he'll probably have tons of money and I'll be broke. Or maybe all my stuff will blow up in a good way and suddenly I'm a straight-up entertainment mogul and his comedy career goes nowhere. Plus, all the big banks fail and he's relegated to a life as my arm candy. Which, not a bad life. The point is, whatever happens, while we're bound together emotionally, our financial paths are still relatively separate, even though we have similar dreams. And that makes things slightly uncertain. And it also takes a certain amount of pressure off the relationship. I'm not dependent on Garrett, and he's not dependent on me. For my guest today, the opposite is true. They're married to each other, emotionally and professionally. So it would be like if I married Allison. At the moment, that's going pretty well for them. They created a hit show on CISO called Take My Wife. It's so good, you guys should watch it. It's amazing. When we recorded this podcast, it wasn't out, but now it's out and it's great. They co-host a UCB show called Put Your Hands Together, which is great. I've been to it. I can vouch for all their things. And when they were here in the studio with me, it certainly appeared that they like each other very much. I speak, of course, of Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher, whose work I've loved forever and ever. And I was so curious to know how they approach this challenge of so completely joining their lives to one another. Guys, they literally refer to their relationship as a small business. On top of all that, their TV show, Take My Wife, which they co-wrote and co-star in, is directly based on their real-life marriage.
What's wrong?
It's broken.
I found it like that. I thought we'd get it sized for you.
Where, at a welder's?
We can get you a new band.
She's not the ring I imagined.
But we only talked about it once and it was 2 seconds ago.
Yeah, but then I had a lot of thoughts real quick. Like, I thought, is it a princess cut? And what is that? And I thought, what am I going to do with the ring when I'm washing the dishes? And I thought, are we ever going to get to see the original cast of Hamilton?
I didn't realize the ring was such a big deal. My parents have been divorced my whole life. I've, like, never seen a wedding ring.
You've never seen a ring? You've never seen Lord of the Rings? The Olympics? You've never seen a ring? It's supposed to be one whole thing, like a complete circle, and it's unbroken. And a wedding ring? The symbolism is it's not broken so that the relationship can stay unbroken.
Doesn't this all seem, like, really intense? But I don't know, guys. They seem pretty cool about it. Pretty goddamn cool. Why are they so cool? I love them. Do they love me? Cameron and Rhea, please hire Gabby Dunn for your marriage and or business. So do you guys want to say who you are to each other and also who you are to the world at large?
Oh, that's a great way of saying that. I'm Cameron Esposito.
I'm Rhea Butcher.
And we are stand-up comics and wives of each other. I'm the wife of her.
And she is the wife of me.
You have to clarify that because people go, obviously, your
wives.
I
love doing that.
To someone, yeah. But like, to who?
This is my wife.
Yeah.
That's my wife.
We are wives.
We're wives of each other.
We wives.
I love wives of each other.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to ask, do either of you remember the first time that you made money doing comedy, and what was that?
Yes, actually, so much. We had really different paths to stand-up. Rhea had like a whole other career.
I was a WNBA basketball star.
I remember.
During the night and during the day, a graphic designer.
Because
you actually can't make enough just playing in the WNBA to support yourself. So
that's
why she was a graphic designer. And
I think that all the time about, I watch MMA and I think that all the time about how that's not their only job. They have to like go do something else because they're not making
tons
of money.
With whatever happened to their faces.
Exactly. So, okay. So were you, you just made money from comedy?
So
did you have other jobs?
The day after I graduated from college, I got my first job doing comedy professionally. I auditioned for an improv group in Boston that was based at a theater that paid money, and I got in. And then 3 months later, I auditioned for like the main improv theater that had a main stage show that, so it was like six nights a week and multiple shows each night. And I was doing that 3 months out of college, making like a half living doing comedy.
Like a part-time job amount of money?
Well, I mean, it was a full-time job with a part-time job amount of money.
No, yeah.
So, and then I also had another full-time job. So my first year out of college, I worked 80 hours a week, and I worked at a school during the day, and then I went to the school and said to them, like, hey, can I have all my classes that I work in earlier in the day so that I can leave and go do comedy at night? So I would work like 7 to 3 at the school, and then I would work from 4 till 10 doing.
You were like a TA?
I was a tutor at this charter school in Boston that had This sounds like a magical fairy tale that had live-in tutors. So I actually lived at the high school.
You worked at Hogwarts.
I did, yeah. But I remember getting my first paycheck as a comic. Like, I remember it was a check. That's funny because if you start in stand-up, the first thing you get is probably not a check. But I started in improv
You
first.
Get a drink ticket.
You get drink tickets. Yeah. Then you get like a cool 20 kind of slid across a table.
And you have to fill out a bunch of paperwork to get that $20. Yeah, sure.
Oh, no. There's no paperwork. No, there's no money trail for stand-up comedy money.
I had to fill out so much paperwork to get $20 one time. And then they called me and were like, you filled out the paperwork wrong for the $20 in cash we handed you.
Yeah. I mean,
it's... And I really don't think it mattered, but okay.
The IRS is going to be real upset about
that exactly
point. Yeah, so
but you knew you wanted to do comedy full-time. That was the goal.
I didn't know that was a job, and also it was ridiculous that I didn't know it was a job because everybody else that I worked with on that improv company, it was their full-time job, and then they were also 10 years older than me,
right?
So like they had been working there, like grinding it out, taking classes, and I was just like some idiot that was 22. Like I just think about this all the time. I wore these shirts that like didn't fully cover my belly button, and we were constantly like falling on the floor because it was improv. And I just remember like my shirt was always riding up, and I was just imagining like being 33 and having to work with like this idiot 23-year-old. Like, just like, if nothing else, can your shirt cover your body?
You were like the Siri of that workplace.
I was
like,
just
in
like,
30
what?
Rock.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a real problem.
I remember seeing stand-up for the first time and thinking, like, it's so cool that they let these actors do this. Like, I thought they were, like, actors. Like, in college, I was like, they're actors. They clearly, like, are in movies and TV shows. And then they also, Comedy Central is sometimes like, you can do an hour special.
Right.
Like, that's really what I thought.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I had no idea it was a job. I was a big jock in high school. And, and in college, I was really into God.
Great. Really, which is, as everyone knows, a full-time job.
So, I was really committed to that. So.
What was your first paying, or one, maybe several paying comedy gigs?
Yeah, I mean, well, to give you a little bit of background.
Oh,
to
yeah, about your graphic design,
my
too.
My wife's background. I went to undergrad for printmaking. That's like what my bachelor is at BFA. And then I applied and got into like multiple master's programs for a terminal degree to like teach in college. And then I went to the University of Notre Dame for a year, and then I dropped out and got an office job in Chicago because, as you know, Notre Dame is in Indiana, and I was moving from Ohio to Indiana, and I was like, I gotta get out of here.
This is a lateral
like,
move.
I just needed to, I really, as a lesbian, needed to be in a city.
Yeah.
And I haven't realized that until honestly recently, that was like the driving force of getting out of there, was that I just was like, honestly, the first season of The L Word was my gay friends. So I just like needed community.
Yeah.
And so I moved to Chicago and I worked as like a screen printer, which I had already done in Ohio a little bit back in Akron. Hello. And
it took 15 minutes for that to come up.
And most of that was Cameron talking, so it's fine. And then I worked as, like Cameron said, a graphic designer, but it wasn't like creative design. It was like a lot of production design.
Is that the office job that you had?
That's the office job that I had. So it's a lot of just like kind of editing, basically, being like an editor and not really like making the thing. You're not writing the thing. You're checking the thing and making sure it's right.
Did you want to do comedy?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I wanted to do comedy my whole life, and I had no idea that it was something you could do. So when I was in Chicago, some friends of mine started taking improv classes, and I was like, oh, I'm funnier than them. And so I started taking improv classes, too, at Second City, and I really loved it. And somebody actually suggested I take Cameron's stand-up class. Because she
had,
I used to teach a stand-up class.
Yeah, she created
an
all-female stand-up class, but she wasn't teaching it anymore. And then I realized, oh, she hosts an open mic and it's down the street from my house. I should just go to that, watch her do stand-up. It's probably similar to the class. And then it was. I started doing stand-up there.
She got your class for free.
Yeah. I just realized.
Sorry about that.
I just realized something while you've been talking, which is I think I know who is the first person that paid you to do stand-up comedy.
It's you. I'm getting there.
Oh, my God. Way to ruin the great twist that was coming at the end.
Thanks, Cameron. And then, so I started, it was at Kohl's open mic.
That was going to be adorable.
It'll still be adorable.
Tell a story.
So I did Cameron's open mic, and then that was in August. of 2011. And then it was in December or January. You were going to Cleveland with the Putterbaugh sisters. And you asked me to come along because you knew I was from there. And so that was the first time I ever did comedy, like, outside of Chicago. And it was the first time I ever got, like, paid.
That
it wasn't just, like...
No, it was
cash.
Not. But I think I also...
You paid me out of the...
I think I also paid you to open for me in Chicago even before that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Cameron was doing a run of shows called Side Mullet Nation, and she paid me to do those shows twice, then in Cleveland. And then the third time, non-Esposito pay was from the Comedy Shrine in Aurora, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Which was like, it's like a club, and I was like, holy shit, like I did 20 yeah. minutes for the first time, and they paid me for the first time. And
did you know how much money it was going to be, or were you like surprised ever by like, oh, this is how much you make for one night, or this is how much you...
Oh, I mean, I didn't think I was going to get paid for any of the... I mean, I just kind of assumed, like, the gig was the payment, you know?
Yeah, no. We'll have people on, like, our YouTube channel, and we'll be like, okay, here's your, you know, obviously it's an independent YouTube channel, so we're not paying a lot, but we'll be like, here's your $50, here's your $100, and they're always, like, shocked.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, so I think a lot of times for, like, creative stuff, like web series or stand-up shows or whatever, people are not expecting, like, anything.
Well, yeah. By that time, I was, and this is probably the same reason those people are getting paid. By that time, I was making a full-time living doing stand-up, and I had mm-hmm. been for a couple of years. And mm-hmm. I think once you're doing that, if you keep all that for yourself, like even if you just don't give somebody $20 for their appearance,
right.
It's like such bad karma. You're going to...
Yeah. That's what I think.
Like, it is going to come back on you.
And I think, like, to me, it's
so,
like...
So it's going to come back on you.
If I'm like trying to support independent creators with my like words or whatever by hiring them, part of me is like, I should put my money where my mouth is then. Or
absolutely.
Like even just say like, hey, you doing this amount of stand up is worth something.
You know, the first person that ever took me on the road opening for them was Maria Bamford. And Maria paid out of her pocket me the same. She matched what the club gave me.
Oh, my God.
Out of her pay, which I will remember till the day I die as yep. being
that's
a
so nice.
Classy move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just think like...
She like did the same thing for me.
Yeah.
And I opened for one night at the Irvine Improv.
Yeah.
She
so
just, like,
so
really...
she's a really good example of like you pay it forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think, you know, just to like really talk about our background and what I think was so special about working with you is that I wanted to pay you to do stand up because I knew you had a future, and I wanted to encourage you in that. And that ended up being the right choice also because, like, not just...
We're on this podcast right now.
Not just did we, like, fall in love and get married, but also, you know, your skill set has been so important. I feel like you were downplaying your graphic design stuff, and
sure.
I know...
That's because I didn't get paid to design anything.
But yes, you did. Yeah,
that office job is
yeah.
what I'm saying.
I mean, mm-hmm. Rhea had, like, a 9-to-5 doing... The
8-to-5.
Yeah, doing like graphic design grunt work, basically. But then mm-hmm. that eventually led to Rhea designing a lot of comedy posters and flyers when we lived in Chicago. And then here when we moved to LA, you know, we basically were starting a small business together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had like connections, experience, a general kind of like understanding of a small business because my dad has a small business. And then Rhea had like this kind of on the ground taste and ability. So like she would make all of our flyers. She designed my album cover mm-hmm. for Same Sex Symbol, which did really well and was like my breakout comedy album was mm-hmm. Rhea's design. And so I feel like we've really been able to benefit from having a bunch of different skills.
We were saying you felt like you didn't want her to just be a graphic designer. You wanted to encourage the like stand-up road.
Yeah, fully. I introduced Rhea the first time she mm-hmm. ever did stand-up. So I got to see her first set and she's one of the first comics I've ever seen start with an understanding of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think yeah. like stand-up is often a really great tool to talk in circles about yourself until you figure out who
yeah.
you are. Like that's really what it is. It's people getting up on stage and being like, I feel like I have something to say. Well, I don't know what it is. So I'll just, you know, like, but because Rhea started a little bit later than some comics, like she started in her late 20s as opposed to her early 20s.
Which might be for the best.
It is. And also sometimes. And also because of exactly what you were just talking about, being a queer person in a place where like you had to explain what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
I think you had an understanding of self that I saw right away and I was like, oh, this person has a future because they are speaking about themselves. And that's mm-hmm. like stand-up is two skills. It's like speaking as a stand-up and it's also self-knowledge. And
mm-hmm.
so if you have like one of those things in spades. When you start, you can develop the other one.
Were you ever tempted, or once you had started doing stand-up, to be like, no, this is not viable. I have to, like, just keep doing graphic design? Because I was a journalist for a long time, and so a lot of times I'm like, oh, man, I could have just, like, worked at a newspaper. Like, I had another skill. And I think a lot of people in L.A. are like, I don't have another skill, so.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, I'm from the Midwest, so my fear of failure is constant. And, you know, like, it's not immediate. And so my background and my sort of dyed-in-the-wool belief of, like, financial stability is, like, I need to be making money right now, right now, right now. Like, if I'm not doing, like, nobody in my family works out because that's so silly. You should just work out while you're working. That's what working is, you know? Like, so, yeah, I mean.
You mean because they have, like, labor jobs?
Yeah, they don't. I mean, they do and they don't. Yes. I remember there being, like, I think it's a Rosie quote of, like, people used to ask her what her backup plan and she was, and she was like, oh, if I have a backup plan, this isn't going to work. You know, like, but I feel like I started in my backup plan, and so I've done that, and I realized, like, well, that is not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I would, like, freelance design work for people if they were, like, interested in what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? I would do it that way.
When was the last time you did that?
When I made my own album cover.
Yeah. So.
That's not the last time. We were delivering our television show, which will come out August 11th on CISO.
Yep.
And we were doing quality control. We were watching through it, and the main title,
the opening
title sequence was
it was incorrect,
incorrectly designed. And Rhea sat down and made our title sequence. Like
the show includes
scenes of Rhea working as a graphic designer because it's based on her lives. So she was sitting. Designing a title sequence to go over footage of her sitting doing graphic design, which is, like, amazing. But you know what? I think maybe I have a different perspective on this, too, because, like, I feel like for me, where I sometimes get hung up is my small business is myself.
Yeah, that's how we feel. That's
I'm,
how
I'm
Allison
selling
and I are.
Myself. Mm-hmm. And so there is, for me, like, a natural feeling. It doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes it's just like, man, this is, like, gross. This is, like, a little bit self-indulgent. Like, there's a little bit of being really good at selling yourself that sometimes feels, like, nerve-wracking because it's, like, what if people don't like this product?
Right.
I have opened myself as a human being up to the types of judgment people put on, like, cars. Because, I mean, it's not me. It's a product. You know, it is, like, a... It's a business, but it's
your brand.
But it's me.
Yeah.
And, like, that is a weird position to be in because it's not, you can't be like, you don't like the design of this Prius? Well, I get to go home. Like, I'm the Prius. Like, that is a weird thing. It's a weird thing. And it's also, I feel that I have a specific mission to be here. I graduated from college and then 10 days later, Massachusetts became the first state to allow marriage equality. So in the middle of that is when I got my first job in comedy. So the entire time that I've been doing comedy, I have been working within the framework of, like, the gay rights movement and marriage equality, and it feels really important and still feels like there's so much work to be done.
Yeah, but that's why I think, like, it's not, but that's why I think it's not gross, because then it's an argument
of,
like,
I hope it's not.
Yeah, because then to me it's an argument of, like, representation mattering and stuff. Like, someone asked me on a podcast, like, do you feel that your work has an agenda? And I was like, it's almost all agenda. Correct. Yes, it's 100% agenda.
You, like, can't.
You're not getting me on this podcast. Yeah, like, yeah. It's 100% agenda. And then there's jokes maybe. But, like, yeah, that's why I don't think it's gross. But do you think, like, I didn't anticipate how much of this was going to be business or running a small business or how much of, like, this partnership was going to be looking at paperwork and business stuff and bank accounts and whatever.
I love that part of it.
You do?
I'm a weirdo. I'm a weird person. We have a really big, like, fundamental.
I mean, I enjoy
you hate it?
On this. I don't hate
no,
it.
No, I don't think you hate it, but Rhea is better at being in the room and hanging out with people and, like, being a chill.
I'm,
like,
a networking person.
Yeah.
And not that you're not good at it. That's not to say that. It's just, like, if you're going to pick sides.
Yeah.
You're the paperwork, quote unquote. I'm the network.
Yeah,
the
which cool is funny because, like, kidding. I think probably also I've just been doing it longer. So I think people would assume the opposite but I think Rhea is good at making people feel comfortable. I am very driven and sometimes on a woman that's unattractive. And so like Rhea has a little bit more chill energy. Mm-hmm.
My parents are divorced. I had to make sure everybody was okay all the time.
Oh, yep.
I had to be really good at communication because they were not. So
yeah, yeah.
Well, you also have like a different level of masculine energy than I do, and mm-hmm. we work primarily in a male-dominated field. So mm-hmm. like Rhea can sit and talk about the Cavs with dudes, and
the
then
basketball
I am like over in the corner
the
with like one of those. Like old school, like stenographer, you know,
yeah,
and like,
you
a visor,
like a visor,
like, you know, like, and it's,
yeah,
we're
yeah.
just good at different stuff.
Before you had reps or whatever, like, did you understand asking for money, or did you ever like ask, like, hey, I'm going to do this thing for you. I would like to get paid. Mm-hmm. I feel like until I had my manager to be like, Matt, you do it. You ask them.
Yeah. I mean, I think you do have to learn by doing, because otherwise you're not going to realize, like, oh, I should be getting paid for, because then you're just walking into it being like, pay me, where that's like not necessarily the best energy to go into something mm-hmm. with. But then if you go do something and you're like, oh, I'm not getting paid for this, and it's taking 12 hours and I'm not doing anything, but I'm here and I could be doing other things, like, oh, yeah, my time is actually valuable.
Yeah.
So it's like it's actually a really good thing for me to learn by doing.
When I was younger, I didn't quite understand that I needed to get paid for things. And a lot of times, until Allison was like, what are they paying you? Which is her first question for about everything. Yeah. And I'm usually like, isn't this exciting? It's this, it's that. And mm-hmm. she's like, right, but like, do you know what you're getting paid? Even for this podcast, she was like, do you know what you're getting paid for this? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I should look at the email. Like, I had no yeah. idea. But then, and then like, also, I've written about this a bit, about how I think particularly marginalized groups, like young queer people and young people of color, don't think to ask to get paid for things, or don't, like, they think that it's like, oh, wow, I'm even getting to do this.
An
I'm
opportunity.
Even getting, yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think, again, I'm a little bit of an outlier in this, because I just knew that I wanted to shift into having a full-time comedy career. Mm-hmm. And in Chicago, at the time that I was working there, there was like zero entertainment industry except for spots mm-hmm. at the one comedy club that was open at the time. And that was, you couldn't go up there every night. So I like cobbled together, I set up an open mic with a bar that needed patrons, and I negotiated $150 a night to host an open mic. And then I
think
started
people wouldn't even think
class.
To do that. I think they would no, be like, this bar is going to sure. let me do an open mic. Oh,
I know.
My God.
What I'm saying is that I'm just a weirdo. I'm,
no, like, but that's
up,
great.
But I
that's
set up
great.
A stand-up class. Yeah. And I set up the, because I, the, because women weren't being trained.
But you did
in
all
comedy.
These things how many years into your, into doing stand-up? 6 years into stand-up?
No. No.
Oh, right. Yeah, you are an outlier. Liar.
I mean, I'm just saying I like figured out sure. that this is, because a lot of, like, if you are in LA, I think you are working towards like your first payday maybe is coming from MTV or whatever
right.
it is. But it really was like rent's very low there. You can kind of live low budget, which I really, really did. I like made very little money, but I really lived like frugally. And I just figured out like a bunch of different sources for money to come from. So like I had this class and I did live dates and I had an open mic and I wrote a blog that was sponsored by the Chicago Tribune. And like I did all of these weird little things. Mm-hmm. So like my taxes were hilarious.
Yeah, that's the,
but,
oh my
but
God.
It,
that's
but
my like stress dream
was,
every night is taxes.
It was just like $20 here and $100 here. And so I really think if you live outside of New York and LA, because those cities are so expensive, this would be a little more difficult to do. For anybody that's trying to start as a stand-up, you can like figure out little bits here and there to free yourself up to have your nights so mm-hmm. that you can do stand-up. Like that is my number one recommendation, is like don't look for a single source. Like
right,
you're never
yeah.
going to get, for the first 10 years of your stand-up career, and then also forever, you know, because there's no Jerry Seinfeld model anymore, like mm-hmm. that you're not going to get your one sitcom that pays your bills the rest of your life. It's like you're gonna have to learn how to cobble. And then that skill is actually going to serve you very well, because that's still, even though I'm not at that income level that I was then, I still use that skill now, which is like a little bit from here, a little bit from here.
Yeah,
balance
that's still
your time.
What we're doing.
Yeah.
Set up a merch store, set yep. up this, whatever, whatever, and then try
look
to figure out.
Look for any little way of monetizing, in a fair way, what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, of people doing, like, one open mic and then being like, okay, pay me. You know, that all.
No,
yeah,
well, you
yeah,
have to
yeah.
look for what. It,
yeah.
What is this market missing? What can I provide mm-hmm. people? And what's the fair price that I can put on that?
Yeah. Oh my
so,
God.
Like,
is this all from your dad? This is crazy.
No, that's just from her brain.
I mean, I don't know. My dad is like a small business person, but I mean, this is just how I've always been. I'm telling you, I'm a weird person. I'm an odd person.
No, but that's great. Do you remember like any like when you were getting serious and stuff, anything that you noticed about the way the other person sort of approached money or the way, because like my boyfriend and I, like, I'm very bad with money and he comes from like a wealthy
titular line.
That's like when they say must love dogs in muscle dogs. Mm-hmm. He comes from like a wealthier family, and so him being like, you don't have a savings account, like a couple years ago, was like a huge like, he was like, you're a monster, like what is wrong with you? And also like, I think coming from different back, like I mm-hmm. come from a very like South Florida white trash sort of water boy type situation, and then he's like you yeah. know, and then he comes from like, his father's like a heart surgeon in Milwaukee, and yeah. they're like very wealthy.
That's funny.
So was there any stuff like that?
Well, I think part of the reason that I also was able to take these leaps into supporting myself doing stand-up in all these little ways is because I didn't come from a family that is super wealthy, but I came from a family that I always knew I could call or could, like, I actually didn't ever, but I knew that I could. Mm-hmm. And like, my parents paid for my college. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have college debt, which is an enormous gift.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I'm not as risk averse as I think I would be if I had had to pay for my own college. Mm-hmm. And so that's a huge gift that I have been given and that I think has benefited our relationship, because Rhea didn't have that like easy brizzy attitude. And I think that's something that we have needed. I also think that having that easy brizzy attitude has limitations. Like, you know,
absolutely.
You should be able to, like, for instance, know what your car insurance is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, not
off
great
the top
at
top of your head.
I'm not great at, like, I just didn't have to think about those things when mm-hmm. I was younger. And Rhea really did for herself. And so she has like this very practical real world knowledge mm-hmm. that I think I just kind of skipped in some ways. And again,
did you notice how, when did you learn that about Cameron?
I'm trying to think of, I think the car situation was when I really, because she's so good business wise and with money, like she's very good with money. She tracks where her money is going. She's very frugal, doesn't spend money on a lot of silly things, but is also a person who lives a life, because I also know people that are like that, but then they're just like, and they can't do anything ever.
Yeah.
But when we were trying to figure out our car, like when I moved here, I immediately got my California
I knew
license
that, this
plate.
Is what I was gonna say too. Now that this has been rectified,
it's legally okay.
It took me like 3 years to change my license plates, which is illegal.
Crazy. And also,
you know, like, you have to change your license plates, but I just was like, But what if I don't care? And Rhea was like, what do you mean?
You can't not care. It's illegal. It's legal or illegal. Like, it's not a matter of caring or not.
There are two things, care or don't care. Yeah. There's no legal
There's
or
no
illegal.
Try. So, yeah, when she was getting
but
her
were you
driver's
like, how
license,
am I dating this person?
She went to the DMV and took no paperwork. And I was like, how do you not know that you need to prove who you are to the government? And I had to like drop off all her stuff, and then she didn't get her license plates. So then we had to go at a separate thing, and then I had to go stand in line with her at the DMV because she didn't know what to do.
So if you're like, you have to join, you're getting married to someone, you have to join yeah. your bank accounts and all that
well,
shit.
We haven't done that.
Right. So were you like, oh no, I have to fix this. This is bad.
No, I mean, what I realized is like, this is what I'm good at. This is what I want to do. So
yeah.
actually, like, in reality, it's what we're doing in our relationship is being okay with each other doing those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And like, actually, it's not to say that we don't value those things in each other, but it's a daily thing to, because I mean, it's a very heteronormative thing. It's a binary, right? Like
yeah.
the house chores, those things are supposed to be the woman's job. And then going out and earning money and being business minded is the man's job or whatever. So there's an inherent value in our society of money
mm-hmm.
and making the money. And then the other stuff is just like, oh, who cares? That doesn't, you
but
just
who
get
cares?
It done.
The but garbage so, will overflow.
Right,
there'll be,
exactly.
Like, everything will be horrible.
You don't have enough bins.
When
I'm
I started
calling for
living
the bins.
Alone, it, yeah, when
exactly.
I started living alone and I realized that there was like you had to do both things. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, are you kidding
yeah.
me?
Well, but the other thing is that, like, and this is not to defend myself, this is just the truth, is that, like, when we moved here, I had an a large enough increase in my personal income that Rhea could quit her job.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so what we figured out at that time is, like, it really is this heteronormative thing that Rhea is talking about, where for the first time in my life, I knew that what would benefit our family and our business the most was if Rhea didn't have to work 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
And so we had a
meeting. Realistically, it was like 48 hours a
week.
Right.
Well, and also you were working for yourself as a comic.
Yes.
You were working for us as a family business. So I was just like, let's remove that 40 hours and put it back into our business. So
yeah.
Can you invest that 40 hours in our business and I will go and make the, you know, money to invest in our business. So it's like your time is money, right? So
yeah.
You're investing your time mm-hmm. and I'll invest my money and we'll have our small business grow that way. And it really ended up working for us, but it was very difficult because it is a weird thing to suddenly have in your life. Like, it's not something that as two women, as queer women, like, I don't think there was any training. There was no expectation. And it's also, you know, Rhea wasn't like at home taking care of kids. She was at home working for our business, designing things or... Mm-hmm. taking the trash out. Like, that helps
washing
the business
your
too.
Clothes
like,
so that you could go on tour and like not have to be stressed about like not having clothes
I
to
would
pack.
Tour from
right.
I would tour from like Wednesdays to Sundays, come home, Rhea would wash my clothes for me mm-hmm. and repack my bag and I would leave. And it was like this very unusual step for both of us. I think neither of us saw it coming, but it ended up being the right thing.
But you haven't merged all your stuff?
No.
No, we decided to stay separate. Because really, for a while, Rhea was functioning as my employee, like mm-hmm. even to the government and stuff. Like, that's how we are set up.
Mm-hmm.
This year, Rhea...
That's what they say for gay marriages, that one has to be the other one's
one
employee.
Has to be the employee.
But I mean, like, I am a corporation and Rhea is not yet a corporation, so she's my employee.
Thanks, Obama.
She's the employee of my corporation. But this year, that will change because Rhea's had a change in her income. And so it's just like an evolving thing that we'll see how it continues to go. But it is like
And it's cool that there's
amazing.
No rules, that there's no like rules of like, you know, some guy going on Reddit being like, my wife makes more than me and I'm upset. You know what I mean? Like, there's no...
Yeah.
That wasn't an
but
inherent
it is
thing.
It's still hard. It's hard
yeah,
to
I mean,
take care of
it was very
somebody.
Difficult to be taken care of. I mean, I did not like it.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because I've taken care of myself since I was in college. I mean, for a long-ass time.
Yeah.
So it's very weird to just be like, I don't know, like, sure, I won't actually make any money. And I'll do laundry. Like, it was just not...
But
it was,
time is money
I mean,
is
it
such
was more
a huge
than
the, thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's still, it was a difficult hurdle to get over, but
it's still,
I got over it.
It still is... It's still... Even if you know that's true, mm-hmm. you know, there's still moments where, like, I would feel a lot of pressure because we had something coming up that... Like, we paid for our own wedding, and I was like, you know, I have to bring in the money to pay for our wedding. Like, that's a pressure situation. And in those moments, there is something in your brain that's like... Damn, this is too much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or Rhea would constantly be like, I don't feel like I'm contributing enough. And of course, I know that's not true. The business would cease to function
right.
if she wasn't available with her time.
Because there's so many little things that you don't even think about that the other person has to be doing. Allison has no... She writes a lot of our stuff. She has no tech knowledge. Zero. Zero. So, like,
that's
the
me.
Amount that I have to even just be like, this is a hyperlink. This is how you, like, that is, like, so, without the two of us, it wouldn't, like, yes, I have no idea what's going on with our bank account. That's her. But also, she's like, how do we post our videos? Like, that, do you know what I mean?
Okay, that's not me. But,
no, but, like.
Rhea does know all of that stuff in such a detailed way. It's. Like,
yeah, I mean,
really,
so I feel
made our
bad.
Credits, so.
Right. So I feel bad sometimes of like, oh, I'm not contributing. But then it's like, I'm contributing exactly what you can contribute.
I also think if you're going to account for every moment and try and make it completely fair,
yeah.
that's impossible.
Yeah.
Right.
You
so
can't.
You just have to know, like, we have agreed that we are not going to try to figure out if this is truly equal.
Right.
And that we're going to feel equal.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
regardless.
I felt upset. I had to go. We were writing this book. We can probably. Allison and I are writing a book. And Allison.
Hey, congrats.
Thank you.
Hey, meatball.
And Allison was like, I'm going to finish this chapter. And I said, okay, I have to go do this interview with a publication that doesn't have anything to do with you. It's just about me. And then I was like, I feel bad that this was scheduled when we were like on our writing day. And I was like, because you're going to write this chapter and I won't, you know. And then she was like, anything that you do that elevates your visibility helps both of us. So it's
100%.
Fine. So
absolutely.
You're And I had not thought of it that way. I was feeling very, very, very guilty.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about that all the time.
Yeah. We talk about that all the time because obviously we audition for the same parts.
Yeah. There's, you know, just every lesbian in Los Angeles in one room. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
No.
So people ask me like, oh, you know, is that difficult? And like, yeah, it's weird and hard. But also, ultimately, like, it's good for our family. It's good for our business.
No matter who gets it.
No matter who gets it.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's probably ultimately not either of us.
Yeah. And it's like definitely.
It's definitely a straight person.
A straight person.
I always think I'm like, it's so good that Allison and I have different hair colors because UTA just put us in different files. I also think UTA put me in like a folder for lesbians and then just sends me out to anything. And I'm like, okay. But then I go into the audition room and it's like butch women. And I'm like, no, you read it better. Like you have to, you can't just have like to all the lesbians you represent.
Have
like
a better understanding of gender.
I know. It's so crazy.
I mean, yeah, but all this is also true because we just made this show together and there were like, we were both the showrunners on the show and there were actually things we were booked for, other things that we knew we couldn't say no to, like late night sets or TV appearances or whatever, and we would just have to leave the other person there to do like two people's work.
Right.
Which is very frustrating for the person that's left behind, and you have to just keep in your mind like, she is helping the family.
Right. And you guys are actually married, and Allison and I are just like, I don't know what, just like in a weird codependent
Well, you're a family too, right?
Yeah, I think so. I've never had this much paperwork or money involved in a friendship, so.
Yeah. It's more than that.
It's probably better, actually, than a friendship with no paperwork.
I'm going to make everyone sign.
I have friendships that I wish I had paperwork for.
I have invested so much in this, and honestly, you're being a little ridiculous.
She did that one time before we even really had anything. We were just like starting as comedy partners, and she gets drunk maybe twice a year. And she was, we were at a holiday party, and she was drunk, and she cornered me in a bathroom and went, I am invested in this, and I need to know that you are invested. And then my girlfriend at the time came in, and then Allison went, I hate when you have a girlfriend because she can come in the bathroom too. And I was like, all right, time to go home now.
So you determine the relationship. You DTR.
We DTR'd, I know. Is there anything that the other person, I guess we talked about this a little bit, that has changed your approach to money based on what the other person does, or that drives you crazy, or that you like, you know, I feel like my mom being like buying something and then saying don't tell your father is like a big thing that I think about with like relationships and money.
I think we actually are both really nervous about spending money. We're both like thrifty people. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that's very funny is that there isn't really the person who's like loose, like just shedding.
Like a Lucy and Ricky, like one person yelling at
just
the other
like
person.
Just like tossing, which is annoying in its own way. Because I think we would both benefit from having somebody that said like, yo, relax, everything's going to be okay. Instead, we just turn to each other and we're like, is it going to be okay? Like, like, we need a less nervous person.
I fully admit that I have anxiety and I'm very nervous. But I do think that I tend to be the voice of vacation.
Ooh.
More often.
That's what I was going to say. Someone being like,
that,
we should take a vacation.
Yeah, I mean, Rhea does say we should take a vacation.
I mean vacation in terms of like, hey, let's take 3 hours off this afternoon. Like,
not like let's go to Jamaica.
That is hilarious. No, like, that, but it's not fully true. Like, you've had a bunch of traction come up lately in your personal career, and I think you realize that it's really hard.
It is
to take that time. I mean, the whole time we've been together, we've been in really different places.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have years on Rhea. I'm just ahead of her in terms of the trajectory of careers, but like, she's going to catch me.
Because Pokemon Go.
Yeah, because Pokemon Go. Because, you know, your career in entertainment, if you want to do this with your life, it'll be a lifelong career and hopefully your life will be long.
That's what I have to think about with competition and jealousy. I have to be like, it's immediate feeling that it doesn't have anything to do with longevity of career.
There's the person that gets the show and then there's the moment that show is canceled. Like,
right.
You know, it's all a long game. And so there's going to be a moment when you're getting stuff and then I'll have to be like, calm down. And I think
Megan Mullally, Nick Offerman situation.
That's right.
I always think about that.
Yeah.
About like,
good job, guys.
I know.
I'm so proud of you. I don't know how you did this.
Cameron also, to compliment, like in terms of money, when you were touring and the times we were talking about that I was like doing your laundry and stuff, you like invested, this is going to sound silly, but I do not mean it in a silly way. You like invested in your wardrobe in a way that like I hadn't thought about before. Like, I've always really liked clothes and fashion and stuff and always really been interested in it. But then I was realizing, like, oh, I'm wearing, like, the same five shirts in these pictures, and it's, like, maybe not necessarily putting the best foot forward. So anyway, that was just, I just wanted to give you that compliment. I, like, reinvested in my wardrobe.
So important, though.
It sounds like such a funny compliment. But no, I do think so.
I really mean it. Like, valuing something that you maybe have been taught to be like, oh, this is vanity or pride or something. But actually, like, it's just saying, like, hey, I care about me. Mm-hmm. And me is saying things I care about.
No, you're right. I mean, that actually was a... I mean, again, I, like, spent, you know, 10 years doing comedy, spending no money. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, then suddenly you're like, oh, yeah. I have to just on stage, as a woman, you're not afforded the luxury of phoning it in terms of your look. You have to be at least clean and neat and wearing things that fit you. And that is
hard. On our YouTube channel, a lot of the comments are about our hair and makeup or our whatever, like, and we ran out of clothes and we can't wear the same clothes in our videos, and it's like become this whole thing. Yeah,
it's pretty serious, man.
Yeah. Oh, God, this is just... So our producer, I'm going to call him out right now, he writes questions, and one of the questions here is him talking about you guys. And I'm supposed to say this, but it's just very funny. It's in Sam's voice. I listen to your podcast, and I almost feel like I'm sitting on your couch in your living room. Does it ever... This is just Sam's feelings about your podcast.
Cute.
It's adorable. Does it ever get complicated when your income is tied with how much your personal lives you're willing to share and reveal? Thank you, Sam. That's just like the cutest question.
No, it really is. And actually, I have to say this is, Sam, because I know you're listening. this is one thing where I think if Rhea and I had a disagreement, the whole relationship could not work. But we are really different people. We have really different backgrounds. We have really different stage presence. Everything about us is different, but this is one thing that we have, like, no difference on, and I think that's really important. Like, we both feel it's important to share things from our lives for, like, a social justice reason.
Yes.
We both also believe that we're in a moment of stand-up where you do excavate from your own life. And then the other thing is we both feel like there's a limit. Like, our limit is pretty similar. We tend to not overshare. And if there's ever a moment where that happens, I think we both know it immediately. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, apologies backstage that you're not privy to. but like, it hasn't happened that much. And there's only been a couple times. And then it's very clearly like, hey, that's not something. And then, you know, we move away from that. And also, like, we also decided very early on that there's no calling topics. Like, there's no, like, hey, this is mine. You can't talk about this.
Well, we do discuss things that happen in our lives. Like, we game it out. Like, which I think is actually what...
But we don't say we both can't have a joke about something. It's like we can't make the same joke about something, but we can both talk about a thing.
Oh, yes. Man. When I was doing stand-up for a while, and when I was dating Josh Gondelman, and one time we were at...
What a dude!
I know. Great. Great, wonderful person. And one time we had, like, a physical... Not even a physical, but, like, a wrestling thing. Like, we were, like, so... Because we both thought of something at the same time, and then we were, like, fighting each other about it. Playfully. But I was like, I think we just literally, like... little sibling, like, wrestled for who gets this.
I have accidentally said,
yeah,
and you've done it too, because we have toured together also extensively. Rhea would do, like, a half hour, I would do an hour, and that's, like, enough time that occasionally, like, we would say each other's things,
yes!
sentence that the other person says.
Yeah.
And then that is the worst.
It's bad.
That is the worst.
Yeah.
We definitely got into each other's cadences a lot.
Yeah.
Which is why
That happens with a couple anyway, though.
No, you gotta get away from that.
But stand-up cadence is very specific.
Right.
And then if you start talking, especially as women, because people are like, oh, you sound like Dig, or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... There's
I like that you are whatever when you know clearly the
that's
only
what
thing
everyone says
has ever anybody has ever said to you is that you sound like
have you tried one of you being blonde and one of you being brunette? It's really worked out for me and Allison.
Well, why do you think I have this long side?
What's something that you spend money on that you refuse to compromise that might be silly?
Well, do you want to say jackets or food?
Food you can't compromise on. You have to eat jackets.
Well, I mean, but I just we've gotten to this point where.
Yeah, I mean,
you
have,
know what it is?
I have
I've been investing money in self-care over the last year, which has been really different for me. So what I mean by food and jackets is, like, I'm buying the nicer version of something. I've been having like a lot of shoulder problems, so I've been getting massages, like things that are, they're not necessary, it's, but they're make life livable. So Rhea's self-care is to
throw out a first
not
pitch.
Just throw a first pitch for the Cleveland Indians, but to be drafted and play.
Sure.
Is that what it's called in baseball?
It is drafted
but, yeah.
That would be Rhea incredible. Wants to play for the Cleveland Indians at third base because she got such a good arm.
I don't even know. I honestly don't even know if that's true, but that seems great.
She does play baseball. I like that you just covered your face and said this is stressing you out. This is not how sports work.
I know that's not how sports work.
Nobody is going to.
Even just
not
putting
gonna...
it out there, somebody's going to be like, you think you're good enough? And then I have to deal with
but
that.
But I mean, like,
and
I know Panoply is like a pretty
you guys have
big
like
network, but I don't think they can do this.
And then your breadwinner situation changes entirely because Rhea signs like a $2 million contract.
All of a sudden, I'm rookie of the year.
$2 million is not the number I was thinking. $40 million.
To pitch for the Cleveland Indians. And then they're like, oh, isn't your wife some kind of like comedian? Who cares?
Low level comedian. You're like, yeah. Wait, what? Obviously this is going to happen. And by the way, Rhea should be a pitcher. What's your speed?
I'm not a pitcher.
5 miles an hour?
I know that that's
not fast.
Miles an hour.
I know. Rhea doesn't have a 100 mile an hour fastball.
Not at all. She's a utility infielder.
Thank you so much for being on my podcast,
Gabby.
Yes.
It was a pleasure.
I mean, look, it's going to be really hard when they adopt me as their child and then I work for them. Because it's going to be like, oh, how do we fire our adopted child? It's so, like, do we promote our adopted child? People will think it's nepotism. These are real problems we're going to have to deal with when I live with them. Thanks for listening to Bad With Money. If you like the show, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a rating. And be sure to tell all your friends who are bad with money that this is the place for them. Also, feel free to tell your friends who have joint checking accounts with their spouses, and that apparently works somehow. Do your partners not judge you for buying too many hot cookies at Cold Stone? Okay, first of all, those things are good. We're part of the Panoply Network. Our producer is Sam Dingman. Laura Mayer is Panoply's director of production, and Andy Bowers is our chief content officer. Our engineer is Jeremy Underwood. Original music for our show is composed by Zach Sherwin, Mike Kaplan, and Jack Dolgen. Our catchy theme song is performed by Sam Barbera. Our show art is by Cameron Glavin. I'm Gabby Dunn, and I will talk to you next time. Bye!
I thought it went great.
It did?
Okay, I think so, yeah.
This is money.
You don't have to feel. Yeah. This is money.
This is money, baby. This podcast is money.
Hear me, the money.
Oof.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
They're gonna cut this out, probably. Yeah.